Final hour of the People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda.
I need glow sticks.
Yeah, Chris Faber's getting the crowd going here on a Wednesday evening.
I think he's putting in his resume to be the Canucks in-house DJ with that sort of...
dropping fire. I like it.
I got a little something special for Randeep for our last one here.
Oh, really?
So just working on a little mix here.
Okay.
Randeep knows what's coming here at the 6:30.
Okay.
Back.
I have a slight suspicion I might know, but it could be anything with you, Faber.
It could be anything. It's going to be something good. I'll tell you that. 6:30. Right. Stay tuned, folks.
Okay. Can't wait.
That'll be the final segment of the show. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. All right. We had a trivia question and are giving away a pair of lower bowl seats to the Canucks and Flyers for tomorrow night's game. Sat, what was our trivia question today, and what was the answer?
Claude Giroux was drafted 22nd overall in Vancouver in 2006 when the draft was held here. Who was a Canucks draft pick 14th overall in that year's draft? And the answer is Michael Grabner.
Michael Grabner, the one that got away for the Canucks.
Well, I mean, he got away from the Canucks and got away from the Panthers because he got claimed off waivers by the Islanders.
Yes.
One of the better penalty killers of the last decade in the NHL. And he played for every single New York area team as well. Man, just loved playing in that area.
I have a lot of time. And then the person that texted me. I have a lot of respect and time for Michael Grabner.
Jessica in Surrey, you are the lucky winner of the tickets for tomorrow night's Canucks and Flyers game. Lower bowl seats for you and a friend. Starting tomorrow, we'll give away tickets for Saturday's game at Rogers Arena. Every day we give away tickets here on the People Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda.
A respect to the person that sent in the answer, Yuri Talusti.
That was a great guess. Actually, it's not. But
the random text of the day goes to that texter. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Dan Rosen of NHL.com. How you doing, Dan?
Hey guys, how are you?
We're doing pretty well. Since we were just doing the trivia question on Michael Grabner, do you have a thought on Michael Grabner, watching him play in the New York area for so many years?
Best breakaway until he got to the net guy ever.
That is so true.
Yeah, so good.
Like, the guy was a human highlight reel breakaway. Penalty kill, especially on the penalty kill, he never finished. He had no finish. But, man, he could fly. Just couldn't finish.
Yeah, I know, and we're just kind of doing trivia question on Michael Grabner. Now, Dan, I mean, obviously the big story today and the story dominating the hockey world is the ongoing situation with the Chicago Blackhawks, and today Kyle Beach came out as a player who was known as John Doe, who was allegedly sexually assaulted by Brad Aldridge, who was a video coach of the Chicago Blackhawks back in 2010. And as everybody knows by now, a lot of resignations and blame being assigned by those who are part of the organization. However, not everybody's been held to account or at least been spoken to yet. And that includes Sheveldayoff, the GM of the Jets, who was with the Blackhawks organization. And Joel Quenneville, who's now the head coach of the Florida Panthers. And Kyle Beach today on TSN made it pretty clear that Joel Quenneville, at least according to him, knew about these allegations and that he had filed the complaint with the team. And still, Joel Quenneville is there coaching the Florida Panthers tonight behind the bench. What's your big takeaway of what kind of unfolded today, Dan?
I mean, my big takeaway, to be honest, guys, is less about Joel Quenneville and less about Kevin Sheveldayoff and what they, you know, knew, didn't know, will admit to, all of that thing. My big takeaway today is I applaud Kyle Beach for coming out and speaking about this. And I thought the 25-minute interview he did, and I watched every last second of it, was hard to watch. Makes you angry, it makes you sad, and in a way it makes you happy for him that this is out in the public now, because there seems to be a sense of relief for him that it is. And my big takeaway from that is that Kyle Beach had the guts to stand up and make it known that he is John Doe in this case, and that he was the guy. that this is all centers around. And I think it's courageous. And that's my big takeaway from this whole thing is Kyle Beach and what he has gone through now for 11 years. This is a once real promising prospect, first round pick. And you just kept hearing things about him, about why he didn't make it. And now you know the real story. And it breaks your heart. Really, it does.
It absolutely does. And I think over the years, especially in the, you know, the 2010s, the 2013s, you heard stories about, okay, this player might be a bust in this organization and what happened to Kyle Beach. But just having the information now and knowing what was going on and prioritizing winning over, you know, people and people's feelings seems like what happened in Chicago at that time with, you know, people that would have known about the situation. And as Kyle Beach mentions that people in that organization did know, he tried to communicate that. You know, we talk about, you know, where hockey has to go, where sports culture and society has to go, but it also tells us that, you know, winning isn't everything. And yet this was allegedly, you know, prioritized there. And it also, you know, the Chicago Blackhawks, to a certain extent through their statements, have admitted that in the past, winning was prioritized over people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what? And we see it. We don't just see it in hockey or in sports. You see it in big business too. You know, making money is winning in big business, right? And, you know, at what cost is it going to come to? But I do want to say, and I do think that from where we were 11 years ago to where we are now, I want to believe we are in a better place. Now, is a better place good enough? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, you know. But I think we are more knowledgeable, more willing, and I think more courageous, as Kyle Beach shows us here, to come out and speak about, you know, these types of issues, sexual abuse, sexual assault issues, but also, you know, drug abuse and, you know, mental health in general. We're seeing it in the hockey world, people coming out, talking about it more, you know, and I think that's really good. And that's, again, I go back to that word, courageous, right? So I want to believe we are in a better spot now than we were 11 years ago. But we should never, I mean, common sense, you know, we should have never been in this spot. You know, this situation should have never happened. We all know that. And whether it's prioritizing winning or whatever it is, this should have been dealt with immediately. Because let's be honest, I mean, if this was dealt with immediately and Brad Aldrich ended up losing his job in the middle of the 2010 playoffs, and it was the reasons of why were given, I mean, it would have looked like the Blackhawks did everything right, you know, because they probably did if that were to happen. But they didn't. They did not do everything right. They did nothing right. And now 11 years later, the ripple effects are just reached so far and wide because of it.
Absolutely. And really can't say enough how courageous it was of Kyle Beach to do what he did today in the interview with TSN. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. We are joined by Dan Rosen of NHL.com. And a lot going on right now in the Pacific Division, Dan. The Canucks have kind of had a couple of good games, couple of bad games. Pretty normal start to the season. Obviously, the fan base rides the roller coaster with each win and each loss, as you know. But the two Alberta teams have really impressed so far, Edmonton and Calgary. Do you think the two teams over in Alberta are for real this year?
You know what? I do think the Edmonton Oilers. I thought the Edmonton Oilers would be for real this season. With a couple of question marks and hiccups that you'd expect, but they look good so far. Obviously, you know, McDavid and Draisaitl are just out of this world good, and it involves depth. And to me, it's not about what Edmonton does in the regular season. I expect them to be good in the regular season. I expect them to make the playoffs. It's all about can their depth come through in the playoffs and can they win in the big time, and that's what matters. With Calgary, it's different because there was a lot of question marks about the Calgary Flames. What were they? What's the future of Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan? How would they replace the leadership of Mark Giordano? All of those types of questions, plus a heck of a lot more. But, man, they look good. They just rolled through my area, and I was able to catch them at Madison Square Garden on Monday. And they look like a team, guys, that really has adopted the identity of their coach. They are a hardworking, physical, grind-it-out type of team. That's what Daryl Sutter wants. That's what he won with in L.A. We all know that. But, you know, Andrew Mangiapane's been incredible goal scoring. Elias Lindholm has been incredible with his goal scoring, too. The goal scoring is not going to continue at the current rate that it's at now, especially with those two guys. But they've shown me that there's forward depth there to pick up goal scoring when Andrew Mangiapane, you know, gets off this hot streak, and when Elias Lindholm gets off this hot streak and it gets a little colder for them, there's other guys there. So I am guilty of underestimating the Calgary Flames, and it's only six games. It's a very small sample size. But through this four-game winning streak, to win four in a row on the road, they still have work to do. They're still allowing teams back in some games and here and there. That's the next step they have to take, but they look pretty good. And it's about the regular season for them and getting to the playoffs. For Edmonton, it's about just getting through the regular season to get into the playoffs. It's a different mentality, I think.
Well, and the team in the division that most of us had slated as the best team of the group is the Vegas Golden Knights. Now, they got off to a bit of a rough start. They did beat the Colorado Avalanche 3-1 the other night, and now they're tied at one against the Dallas Stars. And we hear the rumors of them being involved in the Jack Eichel sweepstakes. What do you kind of make of where the Vegas Golden Knights are at so far this year? And if that's the kind of team that might be making that one big move to put themselves over the top?
Well, I could definitely think they're going to make a big move. That's what Vegas does. You know, I mean, there's what, six or seven guys left from the Misfits from the team a few years ago, you know, that started out. They are not afraid to make the big move. And you're right, it's the end of the first tonight, and they're tied with Dallas 1-1. They get a nice win against Colorado, who, by the way, is struggling a little bit here. And, you know, I think they have to pick it up. But with Vegas, to me, it's, you know, you don't have Pacioretty, you don't have Stoney, Alex Tuch. You're taking three top nine forwards out of your lineup. If arguably top six forwards out of your lineup, certainly with Pacioretty and Stone, and Tuch has got top six talent. That's a lot. Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, it's just a lot to deal with. So I think I still believe Vegas is the best team in that division. You'd have a hard time convincing me otherwise, even at 2-4 this season. And the struggles that they've had, a four-game losing streak. It's injuries and, you know, also dealing with expectations that are high, you know, comes with a bit of a dangerous territory. And I think they're going to be fine, though. I really do. I don't see any issues with Vegas. I think come game 35 and game 40, we're going to be talking about the Vegas Golden Knights and going, man, remember they were 2-4 at one point this season? How amazing. What a turnaround.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Dan Rosen of NHL.com. And Dan, we received news that Drew Doughty is expected to be out 8 weeks or so. You know, he was having a solid start to the year. And even last year, I know the team struggled, but Drew Doughty over the last 2 years has played pretty decent hockey. Do you think this takes him out of the equation for Team Canada? We were debating this a little bit earlier. Or is he, you know, it's going to be a pretty tight situation when he does come back, maybe in and around the Olympics. Or is he still a part of the equation for you based on his history?
Well, 8 weeks, if you're talking 8 weeks, right, it takes you into late December, basically, right? So that still gives him, if he's back at that 8 week mark, it still gives him that month to ramp it up, you know, and get himself, you know, in the picture again. I still think a lot of Drew Doughty. I love his game, and he's the type of guy who had heard enough about not, you know, being on the radar or maybe getting passed over and whatnot. And he's like, I'm gonna go out there and do it. You know, I'm gonna be an Olympian, and I still think he can be because he'll have that month. But you know, look at it right now. Who's really stepping out? You know, and showing you that like. They have to be on Team Canada if the NHL does end up going there, of course. And Cale Makar, no question about it. To me, he's a no-brainer. Aaron Ekblad, too. You know, he's been terrific. I think you can give that to Darnell Nurse as well. Petrangelo is already on the team, but he hasn't looked good yet, but he's on the team. There's a spot there. You know, there is a spot there for Drew Doughty. You know, look, Shea Theodore hasn't looked that great. What do you make of, you know, a guy like Colton Parayko? Can he stay on the ice? Can he stay healthy? There's a lot of choices there. Thomas Chabot's another one, of course, but I think Drew Doughty has to be in that mix after guys probably like Ekblad, Makar, Petrangelo, and I would even say Nurse in that mix too.
Yeah, and the only other one I would potentially add is Dougie Hamilton, but he's always got a lot of, I don't know, the conversation around Dougie Hamilton has always been interesting. A lot of people either like him or they don't, you know? And certainly the last couple of years, he's won a lot more people over.
Yeah, the thing, Dougie Hamilton is just a terrific offensive defenseman. He really is. Like, he has got elite offensive defensive skills. He's terrific on the power play. But I don't put him in, like, I know that he's getting paid like one, but he's not like a top five, top 10, number one defenseman in the league. Because there's still, you know, the Dougie Hamilton defensive issues that you have to deal with sometimes that you don't really see a lot of when, you know, with guys like Ekblad and Makar and Petrangelo and even Nurse now too, who's really played himself into, I think, a top four role on Team Canada's defense. But Dougie Hamilton, you know, you need offense, you need power play, you put Dougie Hamilton on your team because he's that good.
Now, before we let you go, Dan, one of the guys that hasn't aged at all is Alex Ovechkin. Now only, three goals away from passing Brett Hall in the all-time list of 7 goals in 6 games. I think, what he's doing is just a matter of when, not if, as far as him breaking Gretzky's record. But how astonishing is it to see him, even at this age, it's like he's better than ever. He's got 12 points in 6 games. He got 7 goals. Like, how does he do it?
I don't know. How he does it, he's an absolute machine. He's been that way for his entire career. He's built like a truck. He's got an incredible shot. And that was the one thing, right? I mean, that was the one thing everybody kept saying about Ovechkin, is that he might slow down. But his shot, that's not going away. And that's going to allow him to continue to score goals. And look, he's got 7 goals in 6 games this season. Like, that's remarkable for anybody, but he's scoring all the time. And if not mistaken, he's scoring all the time. He's now, where is he now on the list? He's just a couple behind Brett Hull on the list too. So it is something we all should be marveling at, what we see from Alex Ovechkin. And by the way, I think he has a goal tonight too. I think he's got 8.
Yeah,
he's got one tonight.
He's up to 8 now. It's insane, especially
it's incredible.
The injury he took at the beginning of the year in preseason, we're like, what's going on? Now he's got 8 goals in 7 games.
But you know what? Goal scorers score goals. They just find a way to do it. He's not going to score 88 goals or whatever he's on pace for right now. You know, whatever it may be, a 90.
I don't know.
I don't think he's going to get there. But, I mean, he's got 8 goals in 7 games, and there's still a period to go, you know, a little time left in this one. 50.
Yeah.
Within reach for this guy again. And you think about that. 50 goals. He's 36 years old. He's going to score 50 again.
Yeah. Could be the 9th time for his career to score 50. It's madness. Dan, we always appreciate your time. Thanks for this today.
Okay. You got it, guys. Thanks.
There is Dan Rosen, NHL.com, DRosenNHL on Twitter.
Isn't the thing that's so incredible about Ovechkin as well is that his career has coincided with 2 lockouts?
Yeah.
A lost season, because he was drafted in 2004.
Yeah.
He debuted in 2005-06. He could have easily played 2004-05. And hey, maybe he doesn't score 50 like he did his rookie year, but that's a season where maybe he gets 30 or something, right?
At least over 800 goals by now.
Right. Because then you factor in the other year, they played 48 games. Then you had the pandemic as well, where they played 68 games as a team and the shortened season last year. I mean, if it wasn't for the pandemic impacting 2 seasons and 2 lockouts during the span of his career, I mean,
he's essentially
missed
like two seasons and a bit.
Out of his control.
Yeah,
out of his control.
That also speaks to, like, his ability to stay healthy, guys, is unbelievable,
absolutely.
Right? Normal players, if you miss that much time, you would not be in this discussion.
And he doesn't play a soft game. He's not like Phil Kessel, who's never seen a board battle he likes.
He's slowed down a little bit when it comes to the physical side of things the last couple of years, but go back to early Ovechkin. this guy was not passing up a hit. He was engaging with, like, Zdeno Chara, guys that weighed maybe as much as him, but, like, some of the heavies, he would go right at them and engage with them, right? Like, even now, remember when Svechnikov got punched out by him?
Yeah.
Ovi didn't want that fight.
No.
Ovi was basically saying, get away from me. Svech asked for it, and then it was lights out.
We don't talk about Ovechkin as a power forward, but essentially that's what he is.
Yeah.
At least certainly early in his career, you know, we've always just talked about him as a sniper, but he would throw his weight around all the time, getting physical. It's almost like he fed off the physical side of the game to a certain extent.
Yeah, and I love talking to, you know, players that played against him, just about, and Jerome again, like, kind of had this element too, where if you kind of poke at him and you engage them in a game, you're gonna hear it. You're gonna not only hear it in terms of the smack talk, but you basically bring them into the game. And Aguinla was like that as well, because just a great goal scorer, but so physical. Ovi in the same way, where you take a run at him, or you just woke him up. He's going to hit you, and he's probably going to score at the same time as well. So, you know, just a special, special player.
Yeah.
And that whole story about, for a while there, he was a villain because it was Sid versus Ovi. But, and maybe it was because the hockey world was not used to him doing certain things, right? The celebrations and all that. And we know how crusty and archaic the hockey world can be at times, but it's exactly the guy we needed, kind of to wake it up and shake off that rust and shake off that those, you know, the cobwebs of old-time hockey. It was nice to have somebody that refreshing. And I know he played the villain at that point, but, man, he's exactly what hockey needed.
Yeah, he was like a cruise missile, man, his early years. Like, he just blow everybody up. He skates super fast, so much power, so much aggression in his game. Remember that YouTube video, Zeppelin's Dream On with Ovechkin?
Yeah.
Like, that was,
yeah, yeah.
You know, this was like, you know, it wasn't early days. I guess it was early days of YouTube, but I remember watching that on loop just because of what he did his first couple years in the NHL.
Boys, this guy blew up Jágr. You know, generally you respect players, and especially the elder statesmen. Ovi came in and just blew him up that one year and said, yeah, I'm here now.
Is there there's certain goals you remember in NHL history that you just, like, everybody knows. Any hockey fan, doesn't matter what fan base, you know, right? Lemieux in the Stanley Cup final against the Minnesota North Stars.
Of course.
Splitting the D, scoring. Yzerman's goal against St. Louis, right? The top cheese with the clapper. And then there's Ovi's goal against Arizona. You know, going around Paul Mara and then lacrossing it into the back of the net somehow from his back.
Do we sit on, like, you know, that whole goal and being the greatest ever? Because I honestly think it's the greatest
ever. It's the greatest goal I've ever seen.
The one on his back?
Yeah. That's just... Even if there's, like, we can say there's an element of fluke, but, man, he's making that move while he's on the ground.
It just speaks to his instincts.
Exactly.
Score, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible, but I don't know if it's greatest of all time. It's up there, right? It's such an incredible goal. It's tough. I got to start thinking about it. But, I mean, one of the most underrated goals, remember Crosby's one-handed backhand?
Oh, man.
Yeah. How do you get that much lift on a backhand with one hand? How?
Yeah.
Those two.
Richo's been working on his wrist for 20 years and he still can't do it.
The forearm workouts.
Got to get the snapshot working.
See, that was not me this time. That was Sat bringing
it
up.
That was it.
I'm never going to live that one down. It is the People's Show. Wrong answers only. Who is the supervillain in the Canucks hype video? We'll send you off to break with this one. Want to see you fill up the Dunbar Lumber text line a little bit more. Victor saying, Italian accent speaking, Riccio is the supervillain against the Canucks.
Babada boopy, babada bee. So you're playing Danny DeVito.
Yeah. This one from Mike G. The Monstars, they've stolen Petey's ability, Besser's shot, Sutter's stamina, Miller's patience, and Green's line blender.
Ooh, I like that one.
Oh, that's good.
Unsigned. The villain is the power play. That was pretty good, too.
Pretty good.
This one here, unsigned, Jim Benning.
Should have expected that one to come in.
That was much later than I expected, honestly.
Yeah. Thought it would have come sooner. All right, People's Show. Who is the supervillain in the Canucks hype video? Wrong answers only. Plus, look back at our interview with Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650.
What a song.
I believe this is for you, Randy.
Thank you, Faber. This is maybe the nicest thing that anybody's done for me in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, I tried remixing your In the Butts into there, but I just couldn't pull out the remix in the end to try and run Cups with Butts. So you just ended up getting the original. So you're welcome.
So when we were talking about this earlier, I knew exactly what you were aiming for. Glad it didn't happen.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be the Canucks DJ anytime. If I can't put that together, I'm not going to be DJing a Canucks game.
Yeah.
The Toby Keith version is much better. I don't need to be in that remix. Thank you. Great song. Great
put
song.
Put the seats in the butts.
We all have our moments.
Yeah. As Sat pointed out earlier, for me.
We all have our moments.
Yeah, trust me. I have moments every day.
It is the People Show, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. Quickly, a couple wrong answers only here. Who is the supervillain in the Canucks hype video? That's been the question for wrong answers only. Maninder and Surrey saying Mark Messier.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah.
Is he with a bag of Lay's chips?
Bet you can't just have one.
Just getting the Canucks out of shape. Bet you can't eat just one.
He's the devil, but instead of apples, he's giving you out chips.
Mike and Tawasin came with this earlier. Mark Donnelly is the Phantom of the Opera.
Yo, that's good. Marty the Red. I don't know who the villain is in the Canucks video, but I'm worried about Johnny Canuck and what Miller did with him. Maybe Miller is the villain.
Mike and Victoria came in with, supervillain is Louis Erickson, re-signing with the Canucks in 2022, 6x6.
The Canucks supervillain is the offspring from free agency and prospect development. I can see it.
This one unsigned. How about a tire pump?
Yes.
Pumping the tires. House of positivity. All right. It is Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. It was fun being back at the rink yesterday and with the fans of the stands at the sports bar, getting to meet some of the citizens of the People Show as well. So really appreciate that and hope we get to do more of it this year. As we mentioned earlier on in the show, we're going to be having a NFL watch party coming up in January at the Miller Bar,
Milltown Bar and Grill.
So that's coming up in January. Stay tuned for more details on that. And hopefully we'll be down at the sports bar quite a bit this year. Quickly, we're going to talk with Kevin Woodley. We're going to listen back on that interview. It's a big game for the Whitecaps tonight. They've got the Minnesota United crew jumping in. So it's a all Minnesota week for Vancouver sports teams.
Here's your chance to do what the Canucks couldn't.
The Whitecaps are on 44 points. They're just below the playoff line with three matches to play. Minnesota is one of the teams they are trying to catch. So a win tonight would put them above the playoff line. It's been a really impressive second half of the season. Well, really, since they moved on from Mark DeSantos and brought in Vanni Sartini, the jeans-wearing, always emphatic Italian head coach of
Andiamo!
The Vancouver Whitecaps. It's the greatest thing. It's like it's such a meme. It's so stereotypical of just like fired up Italian manager being like, "Andiamo, die, die, die!" Like,
so like, awesome.
How do you not want to run for this guy all of a
sudden? But you know what? I'll say this. You know, and we joke around about the attire, but you know what? He's leaned into it.
Yeah.
Like he's wearing the jeans and the shirt tucked in every game. And hey, you're having
success. It's never tucked in by the end.
Right. It's always out. Yeah, I know. So, but like, again, it's not, I don't love the look, but you're getting results. Like you mentioned earlier on Twitter a few weeks back, Randy, you get results. It's like, yeah, man, do whatever you want. You get results, you can wear whatever you want.
And he can wear a robe on the pitch if they keep on winning like this. They won 6 out of 7. He's had, what, 22 different players used? Every lineup's been different.
Yeah,
he's pushing the right buttons right now.
He is. And you know what? Like he does bring a certain level of enthusiasm. And if you're looking at bringing a new manager in, even as a caretaker, like what you want is somebody to try to light a fire under you. And he's been perfect. Like, I don't know if he's going to work out long term as being the coach to take you to where you want to go to, but he's been a great fit so far. And he's been such a change from managers of past years we've seen with the Whitecaps, right?
Yeah.
Sure, Dos Santos would get mad, but, you know, at times, but it was also, even with Robbo and Dos Santos, and, you know, not that they're not smart men, they are smart, you know, soccer men and all that sort of stuff, but there's almost a level of, I don't know, arrogance to it to some degree at times, you know what I mean? And I think just the vibe that Sartini brings and the enthusiasm, the positivity and how he deals with the players and how they're reacting to him, I think it's a good lesson in how to manage your people.
Yeah, no, it was great. And, you know, hearing Brian White talk about, hey, sometimes we don't even know what he's saying. We got to go and find it, like Google Translate it, because we recognize the words, but they are engaged right now. And even, you know, talking about how they find motivation in those, you know, those halftime speeches from him, right? Like, how often do we hear the cliches or whatever? But these guys are being put in a position to succeed. There's a lot of belief in that room. And from where the Whitecaps have come from since earlier this year, when we were ripping them to shreds, we need to give them props, because if they win today and, you know, LAFC, basically, if they win today, they jump, you know, over Minnesota and LAFC.
Yeah.
And if Portland and LA Galaxy lose, they're in fourth place with two games to go.
Yeah.
That tells you something, guys. That's amazing.
All of a sudden, you might have a home game at BC Place to kick off the playoffs. It's not out of the question. You know, I think there's a couple of things with this team. You know, they've really, for the first time in the MLS era, there has been a significant amount of investment in the squad. This is even under Mark Dos Santos, and he didn't get enough out of it, and that's why they moved on. But there has been a significant amount of investment in the squad. I still think there's a ways to go. I still think, you know, they've missed on Cavallini, even though he's a Canadian international. The fit hasn't been there. That's why Brian White is the starter now, and it has more goals than Cavallini does this year for the Whitecaps. So they are going to have to figure that situation out in the offseason. They're riding, you know, a bit of expected goals luck right now too. Like they're not perfect with the way that they play, but I think the spirit in which they play with under Sartini takes them a long way, and there's belief in the squad. They're better in the midfield. That makes them defend better. That creates more chances for them. They have, you know, players that can score when the chances do come, whether it's Caicedo or Dahomey or now Brian White, who, like, I really appreciate the way he understands how to play and link up with his teammates. And that's something that Cavallini just hasn't been able to figure out. So, like, there's things to like about the Whitecaps in that sense. But, you know, making the most of this now, like, they hold destiny in their own hands. So get the win tonight, and people will really back this team.
Well, you know, I think there's two things going on. Number one, great story. You're right. Win, more people will back, people will get involved, and that's great to get, you know, a lot of momentum behind the team heading into next season. But it's what you do with it. We've seen this in the past, right? Guys where the Whitecaps, you know, have a good finish, a good start. It looks like the pieces are coming together. You're like, okay, you know what? There are a lot of things here that are working. So what do you do? What's the next step? And it's like, it kind of falls on its face. You don't show the ambition you need to go out and make the moves you have to make, right? Or you make the wrong moves and it kind of fizzles away. So as far as getting that real buy-in with the market long-term, you have to take this momentum and have a strong finish, but then reinvest into this club and put 100% those pieces in that help put you over the top. And then next year, maybe you launch up and you have a real strong season. Yeah. And then you can look at your fans and say, hey, we're trying to win and we're putting our best foot forward.
Yeah, that going back to the Robbo years, remember when you had success and you felt like there's momentum?
Yeah.
Slamming the brakes and not reinvesting.
12 guys turn over in the squad the next year.
Exactly. Like, that was the biggest thing that kind of held back a lot of fans. Yeah. And, you know, I was a season ticket holder at that point in time. But there was a lot of, you know, anger after that, saying, hey, you make progress, but why do you take three steps back the following season? So, Sat, you're 100% right on that. It's do the best you can this year and then continue it, right? And whether that's spending more money or,
keep
at the
building.
Very least, keeping a number of the right players in the mix. That turnover has been a problem, but hey, this year they're in a good spot. Hopefully they close out the season and have success, make the playoffs, and do well. But yeah, this is a long-term thing. It's not just the short-term success. You want this to be a product in this city that is loved and respected every single week, because you know what the ambition of the club is.
And Ryan Gauld has just been an incredible find. So kudos to the club on getting that figured out. Finally, a DP you can believe in. With the Whitecaps. All right, that's coming up tonight, 7 o'clock at BC Place, Whitecaps and Minnesota United. Earlier today, we spoke with Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine. Here is part of that conversation.
Listen, like, they've done a good job up until last night, of not giving up as many of those rush type breakdowns and making those big mistakes that give you clear, you know, I mean, clear cut breakaways from the blue line. You know, as a matter of fact, when it comes to breakaways, I mean, they've given up 8 already. They're like 27th in the league. Broken plays, again, plays around the net that hit bodies and go, like, they've given up more expected goals there than anyone in the league. They're 32nd. So it's not all rosy defensively. I think they have been better overall against the rush. But there are times, like, let's be honest, when they're in their own end, where you kind of, you're waiting for the, you're in the music, for the music to start. Like, like, there's a little bit of still work to do on end zone, defensive zone coverage. I think the numbers bear that out in terms of where they rank on some of the chances once plays settled in their own end. And I think, you know, there's probably some of that was expected when you thought about the personnel and some of the areas this team might struggle. So as much as they've done better against the rush, not so much yet, at least in terms of in their own end. And, you know, you guys have been there. You can see it. You kind of feel it when they get pinned at times and get chasing a little bit, and those chances and possession time as well as chances start to mount.
Looking ahead, the next opponent that they have is tomorrow night, the Philadelphia Flyers. Philly's in Edmonton tonight. Carter Hart's getting that start, which makes you think Marty Jones will get the start here in Vancouver, North Van's own. When we look at him, and obviously the San Jose, the final chapter there was not a good one for him. You know, we often talk about bounce back factor. Is there one with Martin Jones?
I certainly think it's possible. And I say that because there were signs early last season of it. Philadelphia wasn't the only team that kicked the tires on Martin Jones. I know other goalie coaches around the league who, you know, did some homework on him, reached out with some questions, because we've done a little bit of work and seen some of the work he's done in the off season. Know some of the people he works with, or I should say, has finally started to work with in the past couple of off seasons. After for years, on purpose, basically just playing shinny. Like, he went away from. Like, not a lot of people know. It's like Martin Jones. I remember watching Martin Jones as a 15-year-old at Rogers Arena, BC Play or GM Place at the time, working with Ian Clark. And because of Ian's oldest son and Dylan Crawford, Mark Crawford's son, were goalies, and obviously Martin's dad managed the arena and ran the facilities there. And so they would be out on the ice together. And even coming up through then, undrafted into the Kings, he was a quote-unquote technically strong technical goaltender. And I think there was a point there where he tried to get away from that. He wanted to get more back to the instincts and not be too sort of pre-programmed. And on purpose, he started just basically not going to goalie school in the summer and instead playing a lot of shinny. And somewhere along the way, that sliding scale tipped in the wrong direction, to the point where over the past couple of years, like, when you look at his technical game, and I've had goalie coaches that know his game pretty well, say, like, it had deteriorated to a barely AHL level. There was no rotation in his movement. He came across flat. If you basically forced him to move left to right, he couldn't get back to his post. He would come across in a straight line, and you could just stretch him out until there was space between him and the post and fire into the open net. And maybe that's a little exaggerated, but quite literally, having done some of the breakdown and video work heading into playoffs, it was there. You could do that. And he really has gone to school. You know, you've heard me mention this name with Mike Smith, with Connor Hellebuck, with some of the other guys. Went back to school in the summer with Adam Francilia, who the Sharks hired, sort of starting off the ice and training and adding some rotation into his movement, changing the way he moves. And there have been signs. There were signs on video. When the guys kicking the tires looked at video, especially early last season, they liked what they saw. The question marks came with, why couldn't he maintain it? Why did he sort of go back to old Martin Jones as the season went on? And so that's the task in Philadelphia, is to sort of keep chipping away at those technical foundation elements. Because the fact he even survived in the NHL, as bad as it was at times the last couple of years with the Sharks, with that type of movement, with barely AHL-type movement patterns, and foundation, and he's still met, like, there's something there. There's a skill there. There's an ability to read the game there that allowed him to still play in the league. And so if you can get some of that foundational movement back, yeah, I think there is a possibility for a bounce back. Am I calling Martin Jones for a Vezina trophy, or, you know, even as optimistic as I was with Mike Smith, who worked with the same off-ice trainer the past two summers? You know, no, maybe not. But I do think there's an opportunity there for him to at least take strides back towards the goalie he was I don't think as much as he's become a punchline around the league and an easy target, I think there's still a goalie there, and I think some of the work he's finally got back to doing the past couple of summers will give him a chance to show that.
How hard is it for goalies to sustain it when they are, you know, making these changes? We used to see it similarly, I guess, with Markstrom, where he'd get a big run of games, not as much practice time, and his game would start to trail off a little bit. How hard is it to sustain these changes and progress you're making in season?
I mean, I guess in season it becomes more difficult. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that Martin's game, you know, in the eyes of, again, not just my eyes, but in the eyes of people who are being paid to make the decision on do we pursue this guy once he was bought out, deteriorated as the season went on, because, you know, a couple things, right? Like, A, like, listen, it's also, it has been, you know, you've got either Burns or Carlson on the ice at all times. They give up a lot off the rush. So there's that. A tough environment defensively has been traditionally for the past few years. But, you know, Dubnyk gets traded. All of a sudden, Martin's playing a little bit more. He also loses that push. Maybe that has something to do with it. The goaltending consultant wasn't there full-time. He was more of a in with the AHL team, in with the NHL team, but not all the time. Like, they had Nabokov as the coach, but the guy I talked about working off ice with the Sharks, he's not in all the time. And, yeah, you got to do the work. You got to stay on it. Like, it takes a long time for that stuff to become instinctual. And if you back off, whether it's because you're playing too much or just because you don't feel like you need it anymore, you know, I always compare to golf, right? Like, back nine, Sunday, in a tournament, under pressure, making swing changes. We always hear that on the PGA Tour. That's when the old swing comes in and you get double-crossed. Whether it's fatigue or pressure, or there's a number of different elements that can cause it, the old habits will come back into the game if you don't keep working on building the new habits to the point where they become so instinctual, they're your old habits, and they're not something you have to think about out there. That's just how you move. He didn't get there. I think with another summer of work.
There is Kevin Woodley speaking earlier today on the People Show. That from hour number two. Be sure to check it out on the podcast. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. Tomorrow, the Canucks and Philadelphia Flyers at Rogers Arena. Canucks will try to get back on track. Coming up, we are going to send you over to the World Series. Game number two between the Houston Astros and Atlanta Baseballs. I really wanted the LA Dodgers to be in this series. Like, I know that's maybe just too easy from a storyline perspective, and hey, upsets happen. Good on Atlanta for having a strong season, but I really did want to have the rematch and all of those storylines between the Astros and Dodgers come back up.
That would have been fun. And even, like, Adnan called it, though, the real World Series was Giants and Dodgers.
Yep.
Ratings-wise,
yeah,
you know, both teams led the majors in wins.
Yeah.
I'm, you know me, guys. I love a little bit of parody. It's nice to have somebody new at the dance.
Average.
Randeep loves
the
average.
Love
the
parody. Love it. Sign me up for an Atlanta win.
I never quite understood how you love the parody so much.
I'm just a fun-loving guy that likes everybody involved.
It's like, so what? You loved having the 7-9 Seahawks in the NFL playoffs?
Yeah, that's too much. You got to be at least, you got to be above 500.
Oh, when it's the Seahawks, it's too much.
No.
Okay.
You got to be above 500.
All right.
If the NFC least made it to the Super Bowl last year, yeah, that wouldn't be right.
Listen, if you're a Dolphins fan, mediocrity is what you aspire to.
Hey, I wish we had a 7-9 team in Miami this year.
All right, it is 5-2 for the Astros in the top of the sixth. They've got a runner on second currently, and there is one out. So, and one out, and they're up 5-2, and Jock Peterson at the dish for Atlanta. So they are looking to get back on the board and get closer. We'll send you off to World Series Game 2. For producers Chris Faber and Raja Sharagil, my co-hosts Randeep Janda and Satyar Shah, I'm Dan Riccio. This has been The People's Show. It cannot be The People's Show without you, the people, on Sportsnet 650.